Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Articulate Warbling with Zach
and Laura.
And we...
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
That.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else matters, not the mortgage, not the store, not my team and all their bullshit.
Mm-mm.
For those 10 seconds or less, I'm free.
And for the next, let's say, hour and a half, depending how long it's going to be, we are going to do a retrospective on... That was really shit.
That was awful. See, Zach doesn't know how to drive, so he doesn't know how it sounds. When you go through the gears in a car...
Retrospective on...
That'll be Fast and Furious.
Yes. The current 8 films and the spin-off, Hobbs and Shaw. Hobbs and Shaw. And it didn't take us that long to watch them, surprisingly.
Yeah, it took us 5 days. Tuesday. One on Tuesday, 2 on Wednesday, 2 on Thursday, 2 on Friday, 2 on Sunday. 9 films. Done.
And we're going to be going through them and reviewing them and talking about them. Would this be an understatement in saying that this is your favourite film series?
That would be a serious understatement, yeah. See, the thing is, it kind of depends on what mood? Depends what mood I'm in, man. Depends what mood I'm in. If I want something to kind of watch almost like mindlessly, but I want a bit of excitement, then it's Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
If I want to watch something that's kind of a little bit more meh, exciting and magical, it's obviously Harry Potter. So... anyway, yes, it is one of my favourite film franchises.
And I will have to admit, it is now one of mine. Though I have.
Because he actually just wants to copy me because he's a massive piggybacker.
A major piggybacker.
Not even sure that's a word, but.
No, I came at this series from the 4th film.
Which is just wrong, I'd just like to say that. I know the way I watched them was wrong because.
You watched them illegally.
Correct, Mundo. Some time ago, I'd seen like 6 a million times on like E4, and then I was
what,
like,
"Rio Heist or the 6th one with the
6."
I thought you said it was the 5th one when we watched it.
6.
I swear it was Rio Heist they put on all the time.
No, 6 is the one that is well known for everything. They always play 6. Anywho, so I've watched that like 10 times on E4, and I was like, yeah. So I thought, well, bugger it. And I didn't have any money at the time because I was like super young. So I watched them on my laptop. And that's when I kind of fell in love with them. And then I bought them and I lost them. And then for my birthday, Zach bought them for me on Blu-ray, which was like the most exciting part of my birthday, to be honest.
Well, no, not all the other presents.
Who gives a shit about the other presents?
I've got you quite a lot.
You did. But you've got to bear in mind that, like, the first film was, what, 2001?
Yeah.
And I would have literally been 4.
And I was 6.
Exactly. So, Fast and Furious weren't really films that I could have watched when they were coming out, because, obviously...
I was aware of them. I remember them being on the background, because my sister's, like, older than me, and those films of those days, you know, my sister was at that age where...
Cars were cool, boys were cool.
Yeah, Paul Walker, Vin Diesel. When my mum had a crush on Vin Diesel.
I mean, I can't blame her.
And,
Vin Diesel is bloody gorgeous.
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention to it. Again, it's such a cultural phenomenon now that you don't really have to watch them in sequence to know what's going on in a little ways, because it's so iconographic now.
I disagree entirely, because really? I don't think that... you should ever go into a franchise midway through, which is why I hated watching 6, not understanding the situation and how it all started. And I don't think that you can...
No, but it's the case scenario. I'm just saying, a lot of people watch it and they're just like, yeah, I know what's happened.
Not entirely, though.
Well, no, because there's quite a lot that goes on. Exactly. And it leaves you clueless. But I mean, it's iconic enough that you get a sense of what it's about.
Yeah, but I still think you need to watch the whole series in order to understand.
Oh, I'm not saying that they shouldn't watch it. They should watch it out of sequence.
The thing is, so many people watch these films because it's fast cars and it's fit men and it's fit women. And I do get that. And I kind of watch it for that reason too. But I also...
Excuse me.
I also watch it because There's that family element in it. There's a lot of lessons to be learned, not just, you know, don't race your cars like an idiot, but also around just, like, in general, different sort of standards that you should live by. And they kind of depict that, don't they, in the film and in their characters.
They're like, people can relate to the characters because they are the everyman in a lot of ways. Like, no, we don't come from that environment or that background or joyriding and racing and heists and, you know, international espionage and all that, but it's the characters relatable. We can relate with the different relationships, different the way like Chris Morgan, the script writer of the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and Hobbs and Shaw said there's soap opera to it, and that's what makes it.
Yeah, there is, but that's, I think what's kind of, yeah, there is soap opera, but there is a lot of character arc going on and stuff like that, and it is about family, and you follow the family through, and actually you can start midway through, but it just doesn't really make much sense. Now, a lot of people watch these films, they say, oh, well, it's just the same shit. It's not the same shit. They also say that, you know, it gets more and more ridiculous every time. Yeah, it does. That's the fun of it. That's literally the reason why I watch them.
Well,
it's because they get more and more ridiculous as they go on, and more so just not even possible. It's just, it adds humour, and actually as the years have gone on and the franchise has moved forward, and each movie that comes out, it's funnier, and actually that humour,
it's more so, it is self-aware while still being pretty grounded in, like, reality, you know. Though there is of physics-altering stuff, like, you know, physics-bending, it is about one-upping what came before and just going bigger and just impressing upon you that that's the whole impetus. Like Chris Morgan said as well, he says, I don't care if I'm breaking the laws of physics, I just care that the audience is engaged enough that they're pulled out of it, that they don't question it to such an extent that they're just there in the moment. And a lot of people say, oh, these films are guilty pleasures. There's nothing to be guilty about liking these. These are exceedingly well-made action movies.
But I think the only issue I've ever had with any of these films is the overuse of the shots of gear changing. And the reason why they do that is because in America, they usually have automatic cars, and in these films, they're using manual cars. And what frustrates me is when you actually look as a driver watching these films, they change gears so many times that they must have like a 12-gear gearbox, which is really annoying because there are the things that are, like you said, physics bending is okay somehow. The things that are, like, basically impossible, again, is okay somehow. But when they get to the point of changing the gears so many times, it's like, please. It's like the things that are physics bending are still realistic.
Yeah.
You could still imagine it happening.
Yeah, they do that more so when it goes from, like the first film, it is pretty reality based. It is probably the most realistic out of the lot of them. Whereas,
same with Tokyo Drift, to be fair.
Tokyo Drift. Whereas John Singleton, rest in peace, John Singleton, his second one is so hyper stylized, so fucking ridiculous. Like, it's become like the underappreciated film by some people, and a lot of people have said, oh, they've imbued it with this sense of, oh, it's probably one of the most, like, the better ones without us realising. No, number two, Too Fast, Too Furious, is style over substance. I like that they introduce a Roman. I like that Paul Walker's still in it. I still like that it's part of that realm, but the stylization, like, it was at that stage of, you know what, like, doing visual effects shots with these cars, it's much cheaper than to do it physically and in real life, and it's over-reliance on those awfully rendered CGI cars. And also, though it's stylistic and over-the-top and it's excusable, that one, tonality, doesn't fit in with the rest of the series, so it kind of stands out from the rest. But what it does do, it introduces us to Ludacris's character, Tyrese Gibson's character, these characters who are going to return after Tokyo Drift.
See, that's why I like Too Fast, Too Furious, is because, not because,
without that, we wouldn't have those characters.
And that's the thing, is you have to remember with this series and with these films, is that you are continuously either building on characters you already know or bringing in characters that you didn't know already. And that's why I think personally, that Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift are both films that, although they're not as thrilling, they're not as good, and they're probably the least respected and the least reviewed, in a good way, films. That's fine, and I agree. However, without them, you don't have the story behind what's going on.
Exactly.
And that's where I struggle, where we've had a conversation before about this, where you say, I don't like 2 and 3. Appreciated, got it, agree. However, without them, it wouldn't work.
Well, what you've just said, Chris Morgan, the scriptwriter, basically said himself.
I really like
Chris Morgan. He has been the backbone of this series, along with Justin Lin, who directed Tokyo Drift. And the inclusion of Vin Diesel again, basically, look, we're going to come back and we're going to basically reintroduce all these characters. We're also going to reframe the timeline of Tokyo Drift so it allows us to do other stuff with Han, who was a character that fucking blew up in a really huge fucking way and that they wanted to see again, like Justin Lin and Chris said. Shit, we just killed off one of our favourite characters in Tokyo Drift. Shit, we want him for the other adventures with everyone else, like the ensemble. But so what they did with Fast and Furious 4, was they brought back the mainstays, the actual, you know, the pivotal characters that we kind of were left in the dark to after the second one, even the first one. Mm-hmm. Vin Diesel wasn't able to do it because this is where he was at the peak of his career and he had loads of things and he basically said, I'm out. I'm not interested in continuing this unless there's something interesting and behind it. And then when it became a thing where it's like, I think we can actually branch this out of a trilogy and make this into a franchise. Vin Diesel was paired with Justin Lin, Chris Morgan and Vin Diesel. They have really been the backbone to the continuation, particularly from 2009's Fast and Furious. And I think that's where the films get interesting because this is where the building blocks that's come before really culminate through 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th and even 8th film. But let's go back to the first film. What did you think about the first film? The Fast and the Furious.
See, I find it really difficult because I've loved these films for so long. It's kind of just like, for me, it's just like, they just exist now. You know when you first watch a film and you're like, oh my God, that was amazing, or oh my God, that was shit.
Yeah.
But then once you've seen it so many times and once you've had that, it's kind of like, yeah, old news, if you see what I mean. So this is kind of difficult for me. Even though I've seen it again this week, it is kind of a challenge because it's like, well, yes, I do really like it, but I find it difficult to review the individual films because they all have their own different areas of kind of ability, if you like.
Mm.
Like, the first one is just starting out, isn't it? Yeah. You're starting out, you know, you're introduced to Brian, you're introduced to Dom, you're introduced to Mia, and you're introduced to Letty, and you've got Vince, who's a bit of a dick, and you don't like him. And that's just kind of, for me, it's just an introduction to a five-star franchise. This is where I have issue with reviewing each film, because they all have an integral part in the overall saga.
Yeah.
So, yes, I love the first one. Possibly not as much as I love
the later
from 4
films,
onwards.
Yeah.
But yes, I love the first one.
Yeah. Well, Rob Cohen did. Well, yeah, Rob Cohen did his job basically, and then he went on from this with Vin Diesel and did another film called Triple X. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I think you'll like it. It's a bit metal though. So Too Fast, Too Furious. It was changing the game again. It was infusing it with that that pop aesthetic, that almost gangster rap, you know. A certain culture, and they're representative of the times they were made, and I can appreciate them and like them for that.
You see, a lot of people don't like Too Fast, Too Furious, and I really do, because I really like the pairing between Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson.
Yeah, there's no denying that their chemistry
is
electric.
They are fantastic, and their characters together are very good, and like you said, Ludacris.
Ludacris, you know, is a small part in there. But I love that they recognised that from the second film, because you can tell that Chris Morgan, the team who did the later films, they do look back at those others as fans. And Chris Morgan said this, I look at all the films behind me, before me, as a fan. I'm not trying to rip anything off or cut anything down. I love this film series. Mm-hmm. So I want to take the best of those things and do something with it that's going to best improve upon the series. He didn't go, I don't like what they did before, I'm making it this my thing. But the thing is, from being so beholden and a fanboy of it, he has possibly made the best films that you could.
Yeah, I think so. And when you look at, you know, Roman Pierce as a character, and you look at how he, you know, how he's portrayed by Tyrese Gibson, and if you seeing Too Fast, Too Furious and the way they set up that character, the rest of the franchise makes sense because he's always been a bit of a pussy. He's always been a loud mouth. He's always very attitude-y. He's almost kind of annoying.
But lovable.
But yeah, absolutely. Lovable, he's probably one of my favourite characters.
A lovable wannabe rogue. He likes to be... He thinks he's the personification of the group, whereas, like the huge joke in number 8, you're number 11, dude. You're not even in the top 10
chart. Yeah, you're
not
even in the top 10 of wanted in wherever they are.
Top 10 in the whole world of criminals.
Exactly.
I know, I like that as well. Tokyo Drift... I really struggled. I thought it was very boring.
See, I really dislike the actor that plays the character of... crap, what is his name?
You mean Lucas Black's character?
Yes.
Is it Lucas Black?
I can't remember.
Lucas something. Must be Lucas Black. Who plays... his character's so forgettable. Lucas Black, I think. Tokyo Drift.
I'm Googling you guys, so just...
Sorry, there's a long dead silence.
It's still going. Yeah, Lucas Black, who plays Sean Boswell in Tokyo Drift.
Oh!
Thing is, I don't like... I think he's meant to be from Texas. And I really don't like that. And I know that's just an accent... But it frustrates me. It's just annoying. He thinks he's harder than he is. There are some awesome shots in this film.
It's Justin Lin trying his hand out with it.
And there
are
some parts of it that you think, fucking hell, that was good.
Yeah.
You know,
also, the introduction to Han, a character who is just... I don't know what the appeal is, personally. I do, personally. Sorry, I phrased that wrong. I understand the appeal personally, but on a wide range thing, this guy who's got a habit, who's an obsession with eating in America potato chips, just eating crisps 24/7. He's also, you know, it's alluded to later that he wished to be a chain smoker, but it's just his style and his carefree nature, his confidence in the character as well, where he says, "Take my car, also you're going to pay me back." But it's never done maliciously. There's no violent undercurrent with it.
I think that's the thing as well. Like when you go back to the first film. And you've got, you know, Dom Toretto says, "Race me to Brian," and he's like, "Yeah, okay." And Brian fucks up his car, and then Dom the whole time is like, "You owe me a 10-second car. Yeah, you owe me a 10-second car," and that's the whole thing. You owe me a 10-second car. But with Han's character, it's like, "Yeah, you owe me a car, but I'm going to teach you first."
Yeah.
And I do like that, and I like the film,
into society as well.
I like the film more because of Han's character than I do from Sean's character.
Sean adds nothing. Sadly, it was a misfire. I know the fish out
but
of
maybe
water
it
thing.
Maybe it wasn't, because actually, it shows you the character of Han. So yes, you are supposed to be following the character of Sean, but you are. Behind it all, getting to know Han without really realising it. And I like that. That's clever.
Yeah.
That is clever, because you are getting to know him, you're getting to know his character very well, despite the fact that your main character in that film is Sean. But you don't quite realise that you're getting to know what Han does. And I like that, because it's almost like undercutting it. Like, yeah, I know he's a shitty character, but it's cool because actually, if you think about it, who are you really getting to know?
Yeah.
And I do like that. I do like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. The thing again, what we find lacks in that film, it just best impress up on that. It shows other characters up better. It shows them like Han specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that young man as well. Him.
Bow Wow. Also known as Twinkie.
I like Twinkie
as his character.
Yeah, who's always
Twinkie's funny. Twinkie's kind of like a younger version of Roman Pierce, isn't he? He's kind of like a wannabe Roman Pierce, kind of funny, but actually almost better in some ways, and not in others, depending on which way you want to look at it. But yeah, I mean, Tokyo Drift is probably the least favourite for me film.
But I think the good thing that has come from it, and the most amazing thing, this film bombed. bombed at the box office. No one went to see it because there's no Paul Walker. There's no Tyrese Gibson. There's no Vin Diesel. Well, if you went to see the films, ladies and gents, one of the greatest stingers and twisters, cliffhangers is the intent from there on was an introduction, a reintroduction to Dominic Toretto. So the studio obviously had built a good enough relationship with Chris Morgan, Justin Lin and Vin Diesel, and they mapped it out and they looked at the third film and went, okay, we can learn from this. I like that Universal Pictures, Universal Studios turned to them, the creative team, and went, no, we have something here. Instead of going, you're fired, that was just, whoa, they said, we understand what you want to go from here. And I think that was the late inclusion of Vin Diesel, that talk, the initial talks, and they were kind of chomping at the bit, and they were going, we need to bring this back, because the overall intention was no one wanted to get involved. I think it was to do with paychecks. So then they said, okay, let's introduce new characters. They did that. And they succeeded in other films as well as, kind of, because they killed Han off in the third film and they went, oh shit! So they started rearranging the timelines. And Vin came in later and it was a pitch of, would you like to return as Dominic Toretto? Would you like to continue the legacy and the story of what's come before? And he was like, yeah, I want to take this on board and I want it to become my series, my franchise. And Vin Diesel has always been criticised for getting involved in other people's projects and properties and then dictating to them. Whereas the studio was offering this to Vin, going, we want you to take control of this. So
he was uncredited.
Mm.
It was an uncredited cameo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
It was that vote of confidence, I think.
Yeah,
come in, so. Have your thing. And also, a lot of people later have returned to Tokyo Drift because of the infamous cameo, uncredited cameo. But also
the fact that you've got the fact that people go back to Tokyo Drift because they disregarded it. They were bored, probably. People walked out. It got, you know, really bad reviews and people didn't go and see it. So they didn't bother seeing it. They go back for 4, Fast and Furious.
Mm.
And then they realise, as they've watched through the franchise, hang on a minute, I need that information. Yeah. Going back to what I said earlier, it's not always about... And this is the thing with the Fast and Furious people, whether you are fans or whether you are not fans, you will always think that Fast and Furious is purely about family, cars, fit guys for the girls...
Racing.
And fit girls for the boys.
It evolves.
And the thing is, and this is what you have to realise, I think, as a viewer... And as a potential fan or a current fan, is that yes, Tokyo Drift is probably one of the worst films in the franchise, but without it, you have not got the story that you need to continue through the franchise. And that's why that people intent. Have returned to it, because actually they've watched the rest and they've gone, huh? What? Don't get it.
And they'll probably get even more confused when they see number 7, where they neatly tie it up with a bow, and they go, one minute, I didn't see Vin Diesel in Tokyo Drift. Oh, I didn't see Tokyo Drift.
Exactly.
Which was my reaction when seeing the 7th film.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think first one is a 4.5-star film. I think Too Fast, Too Furious. 3 stars. I was going lower initially.
You haven't asked me yet.
You did the first one.
Okay, right, cool.
You said it was a 5-star film.
It's a 5-star film.
So the second one is, it's 3 stars. I think I can appreciate it for the day and age it was made. It was catering to a certain era and audience and that pop cultural trend. I like the introduction of Tyrese's character, Ludacris's character. I love Paul Walker in it. Except Paul Walker turns into a surfer dude for that film. Yeah, what up, bro? Yeah. Fake fuck, his character of Brian kind of fizzles that out when he is reintroduced. He's pure surfer dude here. He was so good in the first one, like gave a real compelling, great emotional performance. And he's just like, yeah, I'm just blue-eyed, blonde-haired, yeah, bro. But when it came to him and Tyrese, he was firing on all fucking cylinders there. So 3 stars for the second one.
4 stars.
Four stars from you. Tokyo Drift, I have to give, I think, 2.5 stars.
3 from me. And yeah, from then on, it's 5 stars.
All the films across the board, no questions. Fast and Furious 4, it takes what we were left hanging on the first film. And they,
I kind of like that.
And that love story between Mia and Brian. Also, that there's this teetering edge of damn respect from Dominic Toretto because he allowed him to get away. There's still that veneer of suspicion of you're still for the wrong team. I can't trust you. Mm. And I still like that competitiveness. And also the callbacks about the cars. They do it throughout the series about the fast cars. I need a 10-second car. But what I loved about Fast and Furious 4, it reintroduces different genres. It's not just about racing. It isn't a race car movie. There is compelling drama behind it. There is story. There is narrative. There is complex webs. These people, their lives. And what I liked about the first one, it's like, these people are just, like, in quotation marks, drifters of life, and they just get their kicks from cars, and it's like, no, they do jobs. It's not just about racing and doing bit part. It's about doing jobs.
And it is also and heists about saving the world.
And sabotage. Well, in a lot of senses, that is reintroduced in the... That is introduced in the fourth film, because Dominic Toretto, more so, he realises, as does Paul Walker, that you need to work outside of the system to be able to make a bit of a difference. You need to become those bandits. You need to become, let's say, the Magnificent Seven. And that's where the fifth one, sadly coined, named Rio Heist in the UK, that's where everyone that we so love comes, and they become a group, and they become a family. The introduction of Luke Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson, and it really fleshes it out. A lot of people say the fifth is the best film. I think the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth all hit on the same note of perfection. Seventh one is a lot more emotional, and we'll get to that for reasons we know. But I really love Fast and Furious 4 because it introduces drug cartels. It reintroduces that espionage, undercoverness. Though they had that in the other films, it's more, I don't know, it feels more nuanced.
Also, you've got Letty.
And Letty, that which it reintroduces a whole new form of storytelling and character arc. She dies.
I was gutted. Absolutely gutted. And I thought that was the end of seeing...
Michelle Rodriguez.
And it is. It's one of those things, but... Then again, like the way they pull that back again is just phenomenal.
And they tie up a character from Too Fast, Too Furious. Yeah. I love it. There's a lot of film series that try to cancel out previous films, mm-hmm. because certain audiences, certain fans, certain critics didn't like it. A lot of franchises try to reboot or try to rewrite their story narratives. No, it's all here. They're like, just because you don't like those films...
Back, they will.
They do, because it pays off. Because as much as I may not be a fan of Too Fast, Too Furious, Tokyo Drift, there are a lot of people who fucking are, mm-hmm. who probably are more enamoured and in love with those films because they were introduced to that world of these films, mm-hmm. and then made them go back, like you, to rediscover this series. Mm-hmm. I felt it was great watching this series because the first cinematic experience I had with Fast and Furious was Fast 5. And that was just like, oh my fucking God. Oh my God, this is like... And it is the peak of action, the execution, the stunts, the visual effects, the score, the emotion. There is a nuancedness to it. And though people say, oh, it defies physics, it's still centred in reality. It's still realistic, it's gritty, it's nuanced, it's fucking compelling. And I love the introduction of Hobbs because he is one who, you know, though he plays by the book... Does he really? Does he?
Yeah, I didn't like his introduction when I first...
Did you not? Did you hate him? You were dead set against him?
Yeah, because I just felt like it was a replacement of Vin Diesel. And I just thought, you can't do that. You can't just bring in this new guy that's always going to be against Vin Diesel. And you know, my opinion has significantly changed since then.
Yeah, I understand that. Because we're...
Vin Diesel is the big guy with the muscles that... You know, can't be beaten by anyone, sort of thing. And then when you bring in Hobbs, you're just like, we
are willing Dom and his family on.
Yeah.
We want them to succeed, whereas Luke Hobbs, in this case, is, though he thinks he's a good guy, from our general viewers and fan viewers' perspective, he's the bad guy, because he's against our man.
Yeah.
But then it broadens out and evolves that relationship. Though even though he's got respect for him and he works with him and all that and works beside him, he still says, I'll get you next time, Toretto. Mm. But he respects him for that. Like, he says at some point in the film, I would never ever admit that I would trust a criminal. Mm. And if anything, later in the films, Hobbs becomes a mini little rogue and criminal himself.
Yeah.
And then going on from 4 to 5, that's the introduction of Hobbs, that relationship you said you initially doesn't like him, then the whole thing explodes in another big bad way in Fast and Furious 6. Letty is on the scene, but she has lost her memory. She is as amnesia.
I think that is, yeah, that for me is probably one of the most compelling movies, just purely because you are just willing Letty to remember, you're just willing her to see, and you are genuinely, and you don't really know who to support, because you want Letty to come back to the family, but then also you don't want her to get killed, and it's really hard because she's on the bad guy's side.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'd think
Owen Shaw,
naturally you would be, you know, against her because she's on his side, and you're
but
not.
She
and
is really, she, and but she's conflicted throughout, and
we're conflicted because you don't know.
Yeah,
who to
and
support.
She's trying to fight against it. Like, I really understand from her character going, "You know me," and Vin Diesel's like, "I do know you. I know you more." And I love that Vin Diesel doesn't push her. Like, Lily, you need to know this, Lily! He doesn't do that. Takes it in her own time. Like, eventually when she says to him, when is it, in number 7, she says, why didn't you tell me we were married? He was like, well, it's kind of, it's for you to remember, it's not for me to tell you. Mm-hmm. Like, she's, like, going to number 7 quickly, she says something. Because what I love about this is, she doesn't just click, snap, get all her memories back. They continued that throughout number 7, and anyone who accuses these films of not having a story or no character arcs, suck a fucking no. Have a fucking suck an exhaust pipe, all right?
Because I wouldn't do that. That's disgusting.
Because, well, you deserve it. Because these films do have that. And oh, it's low art to like action movies. Oh, it's mindless fun. Yes, it is mindless fun. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't have nuance. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have something going for it. It doesn't mean that it's up against a more intellectual caliber of movie. Action movies with intellect is in the form of Christopher Nolan. No, it fucking isn't. There is character. There is narrative. There is passion. There is intent. These actors love these characters. They are these characters. The filmmakers, the creators, the writers, the team behind it. It's got purpose. Oh, they're just churning them out for more money. Of course they fucking are. That's why it's a franchise. But everything has good intention. They want to one-up themselves, but not in the sense of we want to better that. It's just to motivate the audience. It is fucking soap opera, but with grit and just speed. It is a fucking great series, ladies and gents. And those need to get off their soapboxes going, it's mindless fun. Of course it fucking is!
Just get off your soapbox.
Not me. I'm talking about other people.
You just screamed at a table for 5 minutes.
Well, I was actually trying to cover because you went for a toilet.
I went for a toilet, yeah. I went and I picked the toilet up and I brought it in here. No, I haven't. I did go for a wee. That will serve you right for drinking too much mid-podcast, won't it? But never mind.
So anyway, this thing of it's low art. Low fucking art.
Yeah, but the thing is I don't... Just for a minute here. Just for a minute. Bring it down to simplistics. I think any form of performance, whether that be movie, whether it be, you know, music or anything like that, is a form of art. I agree. It's the same with writing and physically drawing too. It is a form of art. But just for a second, just realise the basics of this franchise. It's not supposed to be artistic. It's just meant to be thrilling and compelling and bloody fantastic.
Pure escapism.
Exactly.
You can sit down and you can be transported to a whole other world.
And this is the only franchise I can truly agree with people like my mum who say, I go to watch films because I want to escape.
Mm.
Now, ordinarily, before I met Zach, I would agree. I went to go and watch films to escape from my life. After meeting Zach, I went to watch films because I wanted to critique them. I wanted to learn more things about them. Fast and Furious will remain...
That for you.
Always. An escapism.
Yeah.
Because it is. It is
but
so beyond...
undervalue it, does
it? It is so beyond science and maths, even though that is taken into it. It is so beyond reality, despite the fact it's in reality and some of it is realistic. It is so beyond so many things that you shouldn't have to think about that. And if you are sitting there, other than the fact that they changed the gear 20 times... If you are sitting there critiquing it because it is not physically accurate, then just stop watching, man. There's no point.
No.
There's not. That's like watching Harry Potter and saying it's not physically accurate. Just because
it's based in a real world, why does that mean that it has to be absolutely 100% scientifically accurate?
It's people like, they have issue, they have a trouble of suspending disbelief. And you know what? That's your issue. That's not the filmmaker's issue. They're there to transcend you from your supposed reality into this reality.
But this is what frustrates me. You don't watch any superhero movie and say, that's not real. That's not even...
No, because it's within that genre parameters.
But that's what I'm saying to you. Well, not to you, but to everyone. That's what I'm saying. You don't go and watch Superman and go, that's not realistic. You don't go and watch Harry Potter.
No, they read far more into the fucking superhero genre than it actually deserves.
Exactly.
And I love superhero films.
You watch Harry Potter, you don't turn around and say, that's unrealistic. But you watch Fast and Furious.
Characters in Harry Potter, the plight, there's something Shakespearean about it. Yeah, there's something Shakespearean behind all good stories. Greek mythology is the backbone to most of our storytelling devices.
Sometimes, going into critique and reviewing and stuff just literally makes my mind want to fall out of my brain. Because it's just like, please.
Your mind fall out of your brain?
My brain fall out of my head, you know what I mean? It's just like, please, just for a second, just accept the fact that some films are not created to be critiqued on a Shakespearean level, or on a this level, or on a that level. It's literally just for enjoyment.
Yeah.
And if you can't get enjoyment out of these films, that's fine. I accept your opinion. I disagree because I enjoy them, but please fuck off. Not because I don't want to talk to you about it, and I'm happy to talk to people about Fast and Furious. I don't like it. Okay, cool. That's nice, Bob. Why? No problem. Yeah. But what I don't like is when people still sit there and
it's
unrealistic. Yes, I know it's unrealistic. That's the point.
And they cut it down and they devalue what other people get from it. They think you're a lesser certain type of person.
But you think that's fun? Mm. How dare you think that's fun? You can't see my face right now, but that was like full of attitude. What, you actually think that's fun? Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
No, but people like that, that's our reaction to them. Can't you have fun? Like, you having that type of idea that you want to have someone to feel guilty for liking something that you don't like? Fuck off. Get a life.
That's what I mean. I can understand people don't enjoy it, and I'm more than happy to have conversations with people that don't enjoy it, and that is fine, because everybody is entitled to their opinion and their thoughts on these films, on any film. And that's absolutely fine. That's kind of the point of this podcast. It's about discovering our thoughts, whether that be the same with Zach and I, the same with you, or different from everybody. And actually, you know, it's like we've had conversations about horror movies. I don't like horror movies. Zach finds them fun. Okay, that's his idea of fun. It's not my idea of fun. We move on.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to sit there, other than the fact that I will give you my opinion as to why I don't think it's fun for me, or I don't find it enjoyable, I will give you my opinion. But I'm not going to sit there and go, well, this and this and this and this and this, until you get to the point where you go, fuck's sake, this isn't fun anymore.
It's about labelling and putting you in a minority and divides, division. Like, when I did my favourite movies, some people were like, whoa, 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 hold up one day that you can say a movie by Fritz Lang, one of the most famous silent cinema directors ever, and then you can say your next favourite film is a Michael Bay film. I can, but I thought you were an experimentalist. I am, but why do you like Michael Bay films? He's not an experimentalist.
But it's the same thing, isn't it? My favourite genre of movie is thrillers, okay? Something like A Quiet Place is up there on my top five favourite films of all time. And it is that thriller with horror-esque kind of...
We need to market this as a horror so we get more bums and sits.
Yeah, it's that horror-esque beat that makes it.
That's what
I love.
Yeah.
But Fast and Furious I love too. Why? Because it's fun. Because I laugh. And because, quite frankly, throughout every single one of the Fast and Furious films, I grin. Like a Cheshire cat.
And it takes you away from your life. And you're living it alongside them.
And I am, yeah. And I mean, like, talking about it, I get goosebumps. Thinking about it, I get goosebumps. Because it is one of those things that is my... guilty pleasure in quotation.
Take that back!
That's why I put it in quotation marks. It is my guilty pleasure, and it is that because it is just something that I really enjoy. It's not something that is usually my genre. Fast cars and racing for the hell of it.
Snooze.
Yeah, boring, but Fast and Furious, hell no, that's my thing. And this is the thing Zach didn't understand. I love Fast and Furious so much. And he said to me, he goes, the trailer's out for the ninth film.
Yeah.
And I went, okay, cool. Well, was that you want to watch it? I went, no. Well, what do you mean? I said, oh, I've never, ever, ever watched a trailer for Fast and Furious. And I will tell you why, ladies and gents. The reason why I do not want to watch the trailer is because it always fucking ruins it.
Well, the ninth one always does that.
Exactly. And this is the thing I dislike about trailers. I watched it and looked at trailers.
You when you said that and I went, oh, fuck, she's right.
Yeah, I am, because it always ruins it and then I don't really need to see the film.
No. I know why marketing teams do it, but come on. There should be marketing some mystique.
Marketing teams do it for the reason of they want to get bums in seats because they want to show you what's coming up and you get excited about it. I understand that and I've fallen into that trap with so many films. And they've been ruined for me. But with Fast and Furious, I go in, I sit down, and I shut the fuck up for 2 hours. Sometimes a little bit longer, depending on how long the film is. I shut up, I sit down, and I am engrossed entirely in this specific film. And it is very rare for me to be entirely engrossed in a film.
What was your first Fast and Furious on the big screen?
7.
It was 7, was it?
It was 7.
Yeah.
And that pains me, man.
Yeah.
Because what I would not do to but watch them in cinema...
You've got quite close to it being at mine, though, at least. That's why we decided to watch them at mine.
Yeah, I mean, we came back over to Zach's to spend a couple of weeks here, and that was last week. And I said to him, I said, I want to bring my Fast and Furious Blu-rays. And he kind of looked at me like, okay, cool. And I said, the reason being is because my TV is probably about 5 inches smaller than him, his. My TV is at least 5 foot further away than it is when we're at his. And also, he has a big surround sound thingy-ma-bob that makes things sound so much better. And my TV does this weird vibration thing when I have it too loud. And you can't... you know when you're too close to the phone?
Yeah, you're continuously having to adjust the fucking...
It drives me nuts.
We had to do that here, though, on occasion.
We did have to do that here, because on the first, with second the late, and third films... Yeah. Unfortunately, the speech is too quiet and the music and the car going is too loud.
They hadn't perfected quite yet the balance.
And that's okay, because I'd rather do that here than I would with the vibration at home. It does, it vibrates. So you know, guys, when you're having a conversation on the phone and your mum is speaking right into the microphone and you can hear her lips move, you can hear the saliva on her teeth, right? It's like that.
Nice.
That's what it's like, though, isn't it?
And that's, and it's that's like, awful. And it hurts that's your definitely ears. It's awful for you with what you've got wrong with you, man.
Yeah,
it's even worse. It's like experiencing this shit from afar, of it being actually down into your actual ear canal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that case thing of we're going to go past that case scenario. We can talk to the birds come home on the subject of feeling guilty and, you know. what we should like and shouldn't like and live up to certain degrees. So,
can I just stop you there for 2 seconds just to clarify what Zach was just saying about my condition? It's called misophonia, which is an actual recognised disorder, which means that I suffer a hatred of sound, such as eating, chewing, loud breathing and repeated pen clicking. Now, I'm not too bothered about pen clicking, although it does get annoying, and I know a lot of people have that issue. But what I mean by misophonia is this: is that if I even can hear Zach in another room eating, I want to kill him. And I don't mean like, I want to kill you. I mean, I actually want to cut his throat, because it is the sound, I don't know why, it just triggers the anger in my head that just makes me want to kill anyone.
God help you when we have children.
No, because children are different. They don't know any better. And I can't hear the inside.
Well, we can't help it half the time, sweetie.
We can when you don't talk with your mouth full.
No, it's not to do with talking with the mouth full. There's a really deep-seated issue there, beyond someone eating with their mouth full. It's, I can't even eat a rice cake without you kicking off.
This is true. Zach got up in the middle of the night a few days ago with a hypoglycemic attack. Due to the diabetes, and decided to turn to caramel-flavoured rice cakes. Now, I'm pretty sure he ate 1,000 of them.
I only had 2.
He had 2, apparently. But the amount of chewing, you guys, was just painful. And it actually woke me up. That is how bad this misophonia is that literally him eating a rice cake woke me up.
Well, me eating nuts was our first ever argument.
That was the day you called me to see you next Tuesday and I walked out.
Well, you didn't end up walking out, but we had to talk through it because I just thought that you were just being an arsehole.
See you next Tuesday?
Yeah. I basically turned around and went, why are you being such a see you next Tuesday? Why am I saying see you next Tuesday?
Well, I have to protect people that might listen.
I turned around and went, I didn't mean it like aggressively. I kind of meant it like, oh, come on now. Why are you being such a cunt? Because we use cunt down here in Brighton like you use the word, what? Like, hello. How are you, my mate? But yeah, it is to that degree. Anyway, the fifth film, Fast Five, 5 stars.
Correct.
The sixth one, 5 stars.
Correct.
And then we go into number 7, which is, yeah.
Oh, man, this was hard for me. I nearly stopped watching at this stage. I nearly, genuinely, after 7, thought any films after this I will not watch because without Paul Walker, rest in peace, man, without Paul Walker, Fast and Furious is not Fast and Furious. Mm. But what they did with that story and what his brothers, Cody and... Crap, what's his other brother's
Caleb.
Name? Caleb. Is it Caleb?
Yeah. Oh. Caleb.
So yeah, what Cody and Caleb did to kind of stand in for him was just fantastic. And the way they've done it with the storyline, it just kind of fits in as if that was going to happen anyway.
Exactly.
And that, for me, was the beauty when they finished that off, despite the fact that I cried and I've got goosebumps still now. The fact that, you know, he drove off in that, in a different direction to Dom, and that was the end of his...
With that amazing song by, what is it, Wiz Khalifa?
It's Wiz Khalifa and Charlie Puth.
Just, ugh.
Which I know word for word. I learnt it word for word, specifically so that when it came on in the cinema, I could sing it.
And when I saw it in cinema, I'm not going to lie, both me and my mate Max at the time, my friend, he's not my friend anymore, bit of a prick now, we cried, we literally sobbed.
Everyone did. The cinema was sobbing. At this film, at the end of this film. And, you know, even watching it again, I still fucking cried.
We both had a cry.
But this is the thing, is that the way that the story was going anyway, it just felt like it was a natural
end.
It was the
notion of Brian retiring.
Yeah.
Like, he was willing, like, there's a theme throughout the movie where Mia says that she's worried about him because he says he doesn't miss the fast cars and girls, he misses the bullets.
Yeah.
And then it comes to the conclusion is, though he misses the bullets, it's family. Yeah. And it's about going off and deciding to make peace with that life and also for his family around him to accept it. And I love it where Ludacris Bridges goes, it's a joke, he goes, man, can you just shut up for a minute and see what's in front of you?
Yeah.
And that scene, it's making me goose pimply. Though it has meaning in the context of the story, it's the meaning for them.
Yeah.
You could tell...
The tears in their eyes and the way they were acting then wasn't just saying goodbye to Brian O'Connor.
Yeah, look, my facial hair's all gone up.
It was saying goodbye to...
their brother.
To their brother, friend. To Paul. And that was both... It was weird because it's kind of happy and it's sad and it's really hard. And that's what I loved about the part in the 8th movie when they said, we need Brian. And although we all go, well, you can't have Brian because Paul Walker's not here anymore, it was the fact that they still just go back to that...
He's still part of this world.
It's still part of this world, but we can't involve Brian. He's got a family now. And that...
Yeah,
that,
no, no.
I love that.
Yeah, Tyrese Gibson's character's like, Brian will know what to do. And Michelle Rodriguez goes, no.
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 He's got a family now and he needs to focus on that. And I love that. The fact that he will never be forgotten as a character. He will never be forgotten as a part of that
and
family.
And there was, leading up to the 8th film, there was a lot of talk. And there was a lot of money being put on the table and pushed. And they were saying, and the thing is, it was agreed amongst the cast members, we want to pay tribute to Paul. We want to. But we're not going to push for it. The studio was like, well, we've got Cody and Caleb. We've got the money, we've got the devices to do it. And the brothers just said no, because what you've done with the 7th film was good
enough
for us.
It's enough.
And also it shows them as brothers and it shows them their positioning. They're not actors themselves, not really.
No.
Not to the calibre of Paul Walker. And we had this little mini conversation as well, just like, good on you, because you could have easily cash grabbed in that sense.
Yeah.
You could have fallen prey to that, and they didn't. As a family, they said, what you did for our brother in number 7...
It's enough.
It's enough for us. Vin Diesel, the creative team, I think they entertained that for the big wigs at Universal.
Yeah.
But they knew. How else could you execute what happened in number 7 and then say, oh, look, we've got a CGI Paul Walker making a cameo. It's done.
But that's the thing that I love, is the fact that the brothers had enough... in them, and that must have been such a hard thing to do, but they had enough
to go in and finish the performance.
To go in and finish his performance, finish his character, finish that storyline.
That hurt, knowing this isn't our place to do this.
Yeah.
Also, we shouldn't be doing this.
And knowing the fact that they are acting as if they are
their
brother that has died.
Yeah.
And that must be incredibly painful. And to have that, man, respect. Respect to those boys. Because that is just... I wouldn't be able to do that. No. If I'd lost my brother or I've lost my sister...
They were going to write it off as one of the biggest losses in Hollywood. They studio congregated and they said, we're just going to shelve it.
Yeah.
They said, we can't do this without him.
Surprised.
And they were. Vin Diesel was in, And what really, really touches me even the most is his tough man persona, where he wants to run away from the fact that, runs away from the fact that he's never going to have his brother beside him. In the context of the story, but in the context of his real life. And Vin Diesel, in a lot of ways with that scene, was saying a lot. He was saying a lot on a metatextual level. I'm going to let my brother, Brian, go off and I'll have to accept this. Mm. And you could tell that was the meaning of finishing the film as well.
Yeah.
You could tell at the end, we've made this decision. And they all came together and they went, what would Paul want? And they all said, Paul would want the film finished.
Mm.
This is why we're making these films. So they came to that conclusion. They got it, to the visual effects teams, to the brother, to everyone who... They did put a lot of time into that, the four. They postponed, because the film was greenlit a month after post-production, meaning the final edit of Number 6 was done. So they just went into it with James Wan, who is a really good director, who really shows his chops. Maybe he shows a little bit over-reliance with the whirly-turly camera. Obviously had a new toy on that set that day to play with. But they came together and they spent a long time deliberating, and they came up with the best and most honourable conclusion. But every time you see Paul Walker, you do. It hurts. It hurts. Whether you're a fan or not. If on a humanistic level, it just hurts.
Mm.
And you can tell the pain coming from the other cast members.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I love. Number 7 is probably my favourite. And that sounds awful, because it's like, why is it your favourite? Well, actually, because I think it is the best tribute to anyone you could ever give.
Exactly.
Whether it be a character or whether it be a genuine person in real life, it's the best tribute and it is the best film for me.
Exactly, yeah. And it's that they took it on board and they did it. And then when it came to 8, the studio, of course, are going to say, let's get the CGI guys out. And, in a position where they are, it's Hollywood, it's the industry, it's run by money-making. I love that the producers, and I mean the main creative force behind it, being Vin Diesel, Chris Morgan, everyone else involved, they went, no. We can talk about the character.
Mm.
We can keep him alive in that sense. But to go on beyond that, we can't do that. Because
but
it undercuts...
Okay.
It, yeah, because it would undercut what they did before, and it will undercut what Paul Walker did.
Mm.
And I just got to give, to all involved who stuck to their guns. And do you know what they did? They made a Fast and Furious movie that Paul Walker would have turned around and went, hey, man, I wish I could have been in that. Because that Fast and Furious movie is, again, really good. And do you know what's really good? Because the people creating it loved the characters, the cast, the writers, the producers. They took something and they went, where can we go next? We need to subvert expectations. We're going to turn Dominic Toretto against his family. And you're like,
what?
Why? And when, again, the notion and the continual ties of family.
And that's the thing he says at the end. He says, I've always said to you, don't turn your back on family, and you didn't turn your back on me.
No, exactly.
And I love that, because it just continues the same thing. No matter what's happened in the past.
It's not just revelatory just to Vin Diesel's character.
No,
you don't turn your back on your family. But he had to in this case, but they never turned on him. And the performance from Michelle Rodriguez in this film. Wow, this lady... People, I am going to say, from the early films, I'm like, I really don't like her because... And I see her in a lot of film roles where she plays that tough, bad attitude-y, Mexican, tough... She is a really good actress. She adds things to it. And with every film, she gets so more beautiful. But this film, man, the layers of, the confliction, but also the necessity to do the job.
And this is what I love as well about Letty's outlook here, is the fact that she's sitting there and she's saying, I don't know what's going on, but this isn't Dom.
Yeah.
And he's obviously, he's conflicted with something else yeah. here. And actually, and this is the thing, at the end, she turned around and she goes, I know you love me.
Yeah.
I know you do.
Yeah.
So whatever it's going on, Dom, fine, but I know you love me. And to have the confidence in yourself, you know, her character, I mean Letty, to have the confidence in herself to know that her husband loves her.
Yeah.
A lot of women don't have that.
No.
And that was like, go woman there.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, go female. Yeah. Because it was very much, you know, so many women in any aspect of life, they just think, oh, does he really love me?
Mm.
And actually, if their husband turned away from them like that, they'd probably go, oh, so you never did love me. That's what I thought. The fact that she's got such strength in saying, I don't know what's going on, Dom, here, but something's happening, and I know you still love me, so come back to me when it's done.
Yeah.
It's just enough to just like...
And in a way, when they were going up against him, they weren't really going up against him. They were trying to help him in so many senses.
Yeah.
It's a moment, because he is such a character, he is a force of nature. And we've seen him come against, like, you know, we have Owen Shaw, and then the big bear brother, Deckard Shaw, which I've got to say, the introduction of Jason Statham into this series, you know. Jason Statham became a little bit of a joke over the years, his straight to DVD career, and then he started seeing a resurgence in, you know, he knows his image, he knows his capabilities, and he starred in Spy and all these other films leading up to his point in Fast 7, and he just fits in perfectly. And also, they created probably another new double act that will stand the test of time in history, in cinema.
And so many people have said that the introduction of Jason Statham was like a replacement for Paul Walker.
No.
And that is not the case at all. Yes, he's a new part of the family, but he'll never be a replacement.
No.
He's always the person where they go, do we really trust you?
He was the villain. This is the thing. The end of number 6, which we've completely just skipped, the big reveal being... Because it wasn't just any old... like random car that hit Hans at the end of Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. To see that it's the culmination of the sins of London, they say, don't they, have followed us home. The culmination of that again. They've taken this story, they've filled in gaps, maybe gaps that they've built for themselves, and they're like, oh my God. But to masterfully do it like that and orchestrate it like that, it is. It's good storytelling. And Jason Statham is a badass, brilliant martial artist, deadpan, comedic talent to the, you know, he's a good actor, and people don't give him that credit because he's been stereotyped in those roles, the tough British guy. But you know, if you see the Crank films and a lot of other minor little films that no one knows of, he's an exceptional comedian, he's an exceptional talent physically, and he can give it as good as he gets.
To mention the fact that he's fucking good looking, man.
He's a very handsome man.
That rugged look is like all me.
He's really handsome. So the introduction of him, and I had a little bit of a nitpick that he becomes a pseudo good guy in number 8. But the thing is, again, there's auspicions, like little allusions to there is always a boss. There is always someone behind another person's actions. So it makes you reevaluate his positioning. You're like, so, what, 1 minute, hey? Yeah, so it gives bigger, broader context. You don't know, you know, it's like that case of you don't know where they're leaning toward, and I like that. I like that about Fast and Furious. You don't know whether they're coming or they're going, they're good, they're bad, they're ugly, they're gorgeous, they're sexy. You know, it's it the unpredictability factor, and it keeps you engaged.
And that's what I really like about Hobbs and Shaw as well, is the fact that you start to learn more about the family dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, with Helen Mirren being the mum and...
Vanessa Kirby as his sister.
Exactly. She's gorgeous as well, isn't she?
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know...
Luke Evans as Owen ain't a bad looker himself.
No, but not, you know, not Jason
those
Statham.
No, not those levels.
So, you know, that's what I like about Hobbs and Shaw as well, because I genuinely thought, spin-off, yeah, fuck off. And my mum went to watch it way before I did, and she went, you've got to see it. And I went, no, it's a spin-off. I'm not watching a sodding spin-off.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Mm.
And that's what I said to her. I said, I'm not going to watch a spin-off. It's going to be shit. Went and watched it, and I was transfixed, like I am with all the Fast and Furious films. I was transfixed from the moment that...
Because they've added, again, this is what they do with each film. They add a new element. This element being a science fiction element.
But not just that, but it's also the fact, I mean, Idris Elba, you can't...
Look at me, I'm Black Superman!
But this is the thing, is the fact that regardless of the science fiction element, it's kind of like going back to Tokyo Drift. It's about character building in Tokyo Drift, and it's about finding the storyline behind it.
Throughout the whole of the series, even the worst, like the worst quotation marks entries.
But this is the thing, is Hobbs and Shaw is very similar to that. You're getting more context behind the Shaw family, you're getting more context about what's going on, you know, Hobbs and Shaw actually kind of hating each other, and some hilarious, you know, jokes in there as well. Some real,
like,
quick
dick hanging competition in it, trying to get one over each other. That chemistry just
is fantastic. But that, for me, actually, it may be a spin off, but it sets up for the new films coming again as well.
Though they're planning to make many spin offs coming away from the final two films, which is number 9 and 10. They have said 9 and 10 is going to be the final Fast and Furious part of that main saga.
Yeah.
But we're not saying that we will never, ever not return to these other characters, because there's so many more stories. And I've been doing a little bit of research up on this podcast, and Chris Morgan, who I can't give enough credit for. Like, this guy lives and breathes this. I'm really heartbroken that he didn't get a chance to write number 9 and 10, because he's been working, like, non-stop on Hobbs and Shaw. He hasn't actually had a break since the third film. So I give him that. But I'm just a little bit heartbroken that he can't have a little bit of a say. And ever since Hobbs and Shaw, there's been a controversy and divide amongst, not fans, but amongst the cast and amongst people. And Michelle Rodriguez started throwing shade out about Chris Morgan, saying he hasn't got a hand in number 9 or 10. And it's like, whoa, come on now. It's like, he's one of the guys who's actually given you a resurgence in your career with these good stories. Come on, just because he decided to do a spin-off. And I don't blame him. These Fast and Furious characters aren't his characters. They're someone else's. Hobbs, sure, they're his characters. Mm-hmm. So given an opportunity where they said, would you like to take these characters you've created and build? You won't deny it, will you? You're being recognised for what you've given. You've been recognised for what you've done well. And that means the cast of Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham and the good material. And a lot of people give so much credit to Drew Pearce for the jokes in Hobbs and Shaw, because we know Drew Pearce very well for his sensibilities.
There's a lot of ad-lib in there.
No, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Stop, like, assigning it. A lot of the freedom, Chris Morgan has said it, he says, I don't need to do much of the writing, he says, when it comes to these two characters anymore. He says, when it comes to their backdrop and the parameters, he says, it's a board game. You put them on there, he says, but you sit back and they just move for you.
Yeah.
He says it helps when you have talent like Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham, who are at the peak. And I think it comes from a sense of knowing that Dwayne Johnson is firing all cylinders, Jason Statham's firing all cylinders. It is that.
But you've also got that moment as well in 8, haven't you?
Yeah, that was the introduction to that.
Yeah, but it's that fact as well that in 8 they're having such a laugh that, you know, even Ludacris actually spits out his beer, and that is genuine. That's not acted.
That was with Dwayne Johnson in number 5, where they were. It was about the big forehead.
Oh yeah.
That was the. That's when you started really warming to Dwayne Johnson's pitter patter.
Yeah.
Where you see, okay, Dwayne Johnson knows what he's doing here.
Yeah.
He's having a laugh,
exactly.
And it was really nice to see that they give their cast and they say these
that
are your
freedom.
Characters.
Yeah.
You do what is, and it was like, hey, anyone got any baby oil? It was like, da da da, big forehead, and Ludacris is just, you can tell. Just broke character.
It is, yeah.
And
you
can see
it kept in there as well.
Yeah, and you can see it in the other films going on from there, them one-upping each other.
Yeah.
And you can see behind their eyes they're struggling so fucking much, because they're just like, what are you going to say next?
And it's that freedom, and that brings you back to the reality of life, doesn't it? Because that's what happens, man.
Yeah, banter.
So many films are so serious, and you can't have a possible smile.
And that's the really great thing about this film. Even though they're in dire straits, like in Fate of the Furious, Fast and Furious 8, he's like, when I get out of here, I'm going to beat your ass like a Cherokee drum. And it's just like, it's so fucking funny.
Yeah, and then the door opens.
Straight away. But it's like, even though they're gunning for each other, you just love that banter.
Yeah.
You love that intent. And I think that a lot of people have been giving shit to Chris Morgan cast-wise because they think there's a divide. They think that Dwayne Johnson has nuzzled his way in with his creative production team and said, I'm taking this series away from you. That's not the case at all, because you've got Fast 9 and Fast 10. They're not doing that at all. And Vin Diesel said from the beginning, we're doing spin-offs. We want to branch out beyond the initial Fast and Furious saga. So people,
man, get on with it,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. So leave Chris Morgan alone. He has done Everything.
Everybody should just leave everyone alone. So many people get so caught up in all the politics behind it. Just enjoy the fact that good films have been made, more good films are on the way, and that's just enjoy it.
Exactly. And, like, you know, Vin Diesel was trying not to get caught in it, and he just said, I have no hard ill will toward anyone. And then Michelle Rodriguez, bless her heart, did follow up going, oh, no, I'm not shitting on anyone. She says, but he doesn't have his hand in number 4, 9, and 10. But then again, it's like, it's still, I felt like, come on, be a little bit softer on him, because he's actually, he's the one who's given you this opportunity for... But anyway, long story short, number 7, 5 stars. Number 8, 5 stars. Yep. Hobbs and Shaw, 5 stars. Now, Hobbs and Shaw is directed by David Leitch, who... I hope the guy is having a break, because before this he did Deadpool 2. Before that he did Atomic Blonde. What Hobbs and Shaw does is it excels on so many levels that the Fast and Furious is notorious for. But more notably, it's going into more science fiction realms, and that means it's pushing the barometer of that unrealistic side of things. No, it just gives and lends more genre busting. It gives you more space to do more things for potential future films.
See, I find this film really difficult because I love Idris Elba and I really don't want to be on his side.
Mm.
And I know he kind of turns in the end and just says, like, you know, I fucked up here. And then they kill him off. But I find it really difficult.
The thing about Idris Elba's character, he never forfeits his belief. He's still under the delusion that technology is going to replace man. But he comes to that conclusion that, oh, fuck, they're decommissioning me now. Yeah. Oh, well, hey, guys, it was fun whilst it lasted, but technology is everything, and then they just shut him down. But that's the good thing about casting someone like Idris Elba, is you anticipate him to be the good guy, to see him play him. Like, when you're first introduced to him, what's your name? Bad guy. It's just like, oh, okay.
But that's the thing, it's really difficult, because you don't really want to be... Do you, or don't you? You want to be on Hobbs's side, but you don't really want to be... on Shaw's side, but you do, because he kind of...
He's doing his best for his sister.
He regained himself last time, and yeah, he's trying to...
And he's trying to make amends, and he makes allusions to the death of Han.
And then you've got the fact that then there's Idris Elba as Brixton, and you're just kind of like, eh? Who the fuck do I support here?
I like the thing that you cannot deny, we all love a villain. We all love a villain in certain ways, because we like seeing them pitted against each other. We also like a villain who's just a charmer, who's suave. You can understand the necessity to kill them off. But again, it's what happened with Deckard Shaw. We love to hate him, but we love to love him at the same time. We can't just let this character go. And that's why they reused him, and also then making it broader context, like the joke about, you went to see my mother in number 8, like you went behind my back and told my mum I've been a naughty boy type thing. I just love all that. And Helen Mirren, just, you know, just loving it, chewing the fucking scenery, wouldn't she? But Hobbs and Shaw, for me, is one of my personal favourites, because it's attitude, it's style, it's aesthetic, the action, the execution, the almost transformative nature. I was watching it going, I want David Leitch to do a Transformer film. And then I was going, actually, I want David Leitch to direct every fucking action film from here on. He just adds, what you see from different filmmakers from the Fast and Furious, they add their own thing, their own flavour. You can tell what Justin Lin does, you can tell what James Wan does. F. Gary Gray... with number eight, I can see that he did something a little different, whereas actually he was a director for hire, which, amazingly, F. Gary Gray had no career options at all, did straight out of Compton, they were like, we want you, does Fast 8, and then all of a sudden he's doing a big Men in Black film, and it's like, oh, box office numbers means a lot, and it's just interesting, the direction and the option, but I like that David Leitch, because David Leitch has come out, has really come into himself as a filmmaker. I wasn't much of a fan of Atomic Blonde. I liked all the stuff that he's been behind before, but also what I really liked was what he did with Deadpool, and obviously he made a great friendship with Ryan Reynolds from Deadpool, and really, you know, and had that confidence to go out and do the comedic side of things a little bit more, a little bit heavier. It's, yeah, I really like how it evolved in a lot of ways.
So, if you had to rate, top to bottom, the films.
Yeah.
So, your favourite at the top, favourite first, down to the bottom, go. So, you've got first,
Too Fast, Too Furious, Tokyo Drift, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Hobbs
and Shaw. So you've got 9. So start with 1 being your all-time favourite.
What? Out of the whole films?
Out of all the films, you need to rate them 1 to 9. 1 being the best, 9 being the worst.
Hobbs and Shaw.
First, yeah.
Second would be Fast 7.
7.
Then it would be number 5.
5, okay.
Then number 6.
Okay.
Then it would be number 4.
Number 4, yeah.
Then it would be number 1.
Okay.
And then it would be number 2.
You've missed 8.
Have I?
Mm-hmm.
1 minute. Go again.
Right, okay, so you've got Hobbs and Shaw.
First one.
Then 7.
As number 2.
Yeah. 2, 3, 4. Oh, hang on. 5. Then 6. Then 5. Then 4.
I think number 8 will have to go with... No. Above 4 has to be 8.
Above 4?
Yeah.
So you want it 3?
No, above that one on the list. I meant on the...
Right,
above
okay, four. So hang on. Hobbs and Shaw is your first choice.
Yes.
Okay. Second is 7.
Yes.
Third is 5.
Yes.
Fourth is 8 then.
8.
Fifth being 4.
4. Then 6.
Yeah.
And then it will have to be 1. And then 3. No, wrong then way two, round. 2 and then 3. 3 okay, is so my least liked.
Hobbs and Shaw, 7, 5, 8, 4, 6, 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Okay, what's so yours? For me, I'd go 7, Hobbs and Shaw,
mm-hmm.
6.
You don't like Hobbs and Shaw that much?
It's up there, but it's not the same as 7.
No.
6, 8,
mm.
5.
Mm.
4, 1, 2, and 3.
3. Interesting. So, let's go down. I'm really interested in your side. Why does 7 make the top?
Because I just think it was the best made. It was a fantastic tribute to both Paul Walker and his character, and it was just wonderful.
Hobbs and Shaw.
It was probably one of the best spin-offs I've ever seen of anything.
Okay. Number 6?
The one I've seen the most, and probably the one I enjoy the most.
Number 8?
I just think it's so ridiculous, it's just brilliant.
Number 5? Why is number 5 before number 4?
Because I think that's where it starts getting really interesting.
Because all the characters are interesting.
That's where it starts getting really interesting.
Number 4 is obviously where it is.
Kind of like where it starts off there.
I would always, my opinion as well, would be like, if I had to, in a lot of senses, 4 and 1 are in the same level, in the same
mark. Yeah, I can understand that, because 4 is like...
The reintroduction of those characters.
All the characters, and the first one is the introduction of them in
general. Yeah.
Second one, I do enjoy, but not as much, and the third one, well, me.
It's a bit of a mess.
It's a good story to use for later, but it's not a great film.
Oh, I love that. It's a good fixture, part of this machine.
Yep.
It does have its reason.
It has its uses.
I think that's just
film.
I just think that's from clever writing. They saw the film, and with that addition of Vin Diesel at the end, they went, okay, we can repurpose this part, and we can make it purposeful and use it for a reason to have a broader context and a broader meaning.
That's what I was saying at the beginning. The whole point is that you cannot...
But initially it was... No. They kind of had to...
Yeah, but I'm not saying them, I'm saying me.
Yeah.
My point from the very beginning is that you cannot watch the whole franchise without having seen Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift purely because of the simple fact that it helps you to understand the characters for the later movies. And that's the thing, no matter how terrible they were when they were made, that might not have been the
impetus for 7.
That might not have been the plan at the time, but it is something that has been used in a very clever way. It is very, very clever.
Hear, hear. So, I think that's it on this retrospective for the Fast and Furious series.
Saga.
Saga. Is that what it is on the box set? Saga. It's a saga. What are you hoping for the future?
I don't like to think about it.
What are you hoping for Hobbs and Shaw future?
Again, don't really like to think about it.
Do you think they're going to do a Tej and Roman spin-off? Would you like that?
I wouldn't mind. I'd watch it.
What about they would have been talking about a Letty prequel?
I don't like to think about it. I like they've to enjoy also, it. I like to.
They're talking about a Vin Diesel prequel, and it starts from when he comes out of his mother, and he's hovering a steering wheel, and she went, "Oh, wee, that really opened up my vagina, son." No, I just made that up. That was just my Fast and Furious film.
That's all from us, guys.
Gave birth to him, and he goes, "Brum brum, mummy, Corona, family, Corona, family, extra." Anyway, that's That's all we have time for.
It is indeed.
So it's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Good timing.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
This has been Articulate Warbling with Laura and Zach. Zach, definitely make that Fast and Furious movie. I don't know. You definitely need to make it, even if it's just starring you as Vin Diesel or The Rock or whoever you mentioned a few moments ago. Steering wheel, that's a good one. All right, okay. Thank you so much for listening to Articulate Warbling. You can track down Zach at Sweat Drenched Writ and Zach and Laura at sweatdrenchedpress.com, or just Google Articulate Warbling, and I think they're the only ones out there for that. I have been DB Spitzer with Badger's Drift Studios and glorious Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time for another Articulate Warbling. Thank you.